You asked. You asked again, and then you stopped asking. But we never forgot, and at last, we are back. Welcome to the long-awaited relaunch of the Planet Football Podcast. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined by SI senior writer Grant Wall and SI.com's Brian Strauss. And each week, we'll talk about all the latest happenings across, well, Planet Football. Today, we'll keep it mostly domestic, and guys, let's jump right into it with the CONCACAF Champions League final. The Montreal Impact have gone from worst to, well, still kind of worse than MLS, but they're the first team in 4 years from the league to reach the final, and they'll face off against Mexican power Club America in a two-leg series on April 22nd and 29th. Grant, your take on the final matchup and how both teams got there.
First off, Avi, let me just say this gets me emotional getting this podcast going again. Welcome back to the people who were listening before. This is going to be a regular weekly podcast. SI is back in the podcast business. I'm really happy about that and to be doing it with two of my favorite guys. Brian, you can come in now.
Hi.
Welcome, Brian. I'm
so excited. I was sitting here waiting with bated breath to hear your analysis of the CCL. I didn't realize I was going to be called on a stage.
I actually might answer that question in a second. But I would say this CCL, and I tweeted this during the second semifinal, is maybe the most insane continental soccer tournament in the world. And I love Libertadores down in South America. I obviously enjoy UEFA Champions League, but some of the stuff we saw in the semifinals is just absolutely ridiculous. Not always the best soccer, but high entertainment value. To see Montreal get to the final and become just the second MLS team to get to a CCL final for me is a crazy story when you look at the fact that Montreal is really not a very good team in MLS. I think, Brian, you have the stats on that?
Yeah, I tweeted this the other night. They have won 7 of their past 46 MLS games, which is astonishing and terrible and could be one of the worst. I mean, it's hard to be worse than that because obviously in most other first division leagues in the world, even a portion of a record like that gets you relegated. So I wonder how many teams on the planet that play in a first division have won only 7 of 46 games. It's atrocious. But the way Frank Klopas remade this team over the winter, signing 11 new players, really rebuilding the spine of that team with guys like Sumare and Lawrence Simon and Nigel Rio-Coker and Piatti and Donadel. And I mean, it's a different team now with a different mentality, and they've figured it out. It's absolutely baffling, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, you look at the semifinal second legs, and both of them were crazy. Down in Costa Rica, Alajuelense needed 4 second-half goals to come back. They got 3, and only the away goals rule ends up saving Montreal there. And then in the second semifinal, Club America in Mexico hosting Herediano. Herediano comes in with a 3-goal advantage, and that's gone within, what, minutes? By halftime, it's 5-0. It's over. And now we will see a Mexican team in the final. And Montreal has eliminated a Mexican team already in the elimination rounds, Pachuca. So it's certainly not impossible. But I don't know. What do you think, Avi? Does this have a chance to be another upset?
I don't know. I mean, America is so good. And playing at Azteca, I mean, you saw exactly what that team is capable of in that stadium. That place had, what, 95,000 people, I think. They scored a goal within 3 minutes. They scored 3 within 18 and a half, 5 by halftime. And the fact that the first leg is there, I don't know that necessarily bodes well for Montreal in this case. I think it's easy to get into a hole and then to have to dig back out of that hole is a little different than nursing a lead, which they've done in the last round. So I think Montreal is an amazing story. I think it's great for MLS that the league has a representative in the final again, even though it's, you know, it's not the Galaxy, it's not the Sounders, it's not Real Salt Lake, it's not who you might expect. But that said, I have a hard time seeing the Impact making their way to the Club World Cup.
I trust Frank Klopas to not allow his players to take whatever drugs the Herediano players ingested before they took the field. I mean, that was an embarrassment. That was 30 of the worst minutes of soccer I've ever seen. Montreal's already, I think this is also interesting, they're already the first MLS team to eliminate two Latin American opponents in the same CONCACAF tournament, home and away. It's never been done before. And so that already is a monumental accomplishment. I think I think it's a testament to how seriously Montreal has taken this competition. I mean, Frank Klopas took his team to Mexico for 2 weeks during preseason before Pachuca. And then that's logistically difficult. It's expensive. And they made that effort to acclimatize themselves to Mexico, and it's paid off. I think, this shows that it can be done. And I think, I hope MLS looks at taking the tournament a little bit more seriously. I think it's worth noting that the two teams that made the knockout round, DC and Montreal, the two MLS teams, both benefited from a double allocation boost. They won their domestic cup qualifying for CCL, which brought with it a bit of extra money. And they both missed the playoffs the year before qualifying for CCL, which gives you an extra bit of money.
So, the you suck allocation.
Yeah, the you suck allocation. So I don't think MLS should be banking on teams doing both of those things in order to do well in CCL. I mean, it's not something you should shoot for, you know, I mean, winning your cup and being terrible in the league. So the MLS needs to find a way again to continue to incentivize and boost teams in this tournament. And as I've written many times, needs to continue to work with CONCACAF on the schedule and to get this tournament scheduled across the calendar year like they do in Asia and Africa. I think that's also critical.
You know, I think we actually are in agreement here. We like CCL. We'd like to see an MLS team win this tournament.
Oh, definitely.
And
it's fun.
Club
yeah,
World Cup.
Absolutely.
And not necessarily because the FIFA Club World Cup is the greatest thing ever, but it would be fun to see in a competitive environment an MLS team take on some of these world powerhouses potentially. The funny thing about this for me is that we did, before the start of the MLS season, kind of our picks for the year and who might be the first coach fired. And I would have picked Frank Klopas if they hadn't already had some success in against Pachuca, because here you have a guy who that team is not necessarily that good in MLS, surely wasn't last year. And Joey Saputo has fired guys left and right over the last couple of years. But now I almost feel like Frank Klopas has a free pass. I can't see him being fired this year, even if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think when you give a guy, and again, the parallel with DC United and Ben Olsen a year ago, when you give a guy the latitude and the finances to overhaul a team, I think you kind of got to give him some time to coach that team. And obviously, we saw what Ben Olsen did last year with DC United, finishing in first in the East. And Frank will get this year to coach his new Montreal Impact team and see if they can be competitive in MLS. But right, Joey Saputo could still fire him tomorrow, no question.
Exactly. When you're dealing with an owner like Saputo, it's a little bit different than the Jason Levine and Eric Tohir, Will Chang triumvirate and DC. They kind of have a different style of man management, I guess you could
say. So what's this is what I've been thinking about. Let's say Montreal, whether it was Herediano or America, let's say Montreal pulls this off. Let's say they win this thing. What's the reaction at MLS headquarters when they finally, if and when they finally win this tournament, and it's Montreal? It's a team that's been terrible in the league. It's a team that has very little resonance around the league. Not a lot of people pay attention to the Montreal Impact. You have the cross border issue, the language issue. It's just, I mean, there's a reason that best networks typically don't show, you know, Canadian teams. You know, there's a reason that they have their own winter classic in the NHL, the Heritage Classic, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, there is an international boundary, and I think it does affect the way American fans and media cover pro sports teams in Canada. And it would just be funny to me if they finally win this thing and it turns out to be, you know, perhaps the MLS team with the lowest Q rating in the US.
It would be, I don't know. I would give it sort of that the shrug emoticon on Twitter. I mean, like, and just sort of laugh, I guess, if Montreal were to win this, because I think it would actually address a lot of the excuses we've seen over the years for MLS futility in CONCACAF Champions League, which have been, oh, it's not played at the right time of year for us. You know, our teams aren't in great form at that point early in the season.
Those things are still true.
I don't know if they are, actually.
When DC United took the field against Alajuela, I remember looking this up. Alajuela was playing like its 11th game in 40 days, and DC hadn't played a competitive game in 100.
I don't care. Just win the game.
How can that not make a difference?
Potentially it does. I'm just saying that, like, Montreal, a bad MLS team going this far in CONCACAF Champions League, is admittedly a small sample size, but I don't think we can any longer say that these things are preventing MLS teams from succeeding, even bad MLS teams.
I think we can say that they are making it much, much more difficult and less likely. And just because once in a while somebody sneaks through, I don't think disproves the general rule. I think MLS teams are out of form at this time of year. And I think if you ran and also, as I've argued, I mean, if you were to shift the CCL to a calendar year format like they do in Asia and Africa, the CCL winner would then be better prepared to play the Club World Cup. Right now, Mexican teams who win the CCL are waiting 7 or 8 months to play the Club World Cup, which is an eternity. And then they go to the Club World Cup and they're, by and large, they're pretty bad. And they're not as good as the Asian and African teams who qualified for the tournament weeks or a month earlier. So I think it would benefit MLS teams if the calendar moved. I think it would benefit Mexican teams if the calendar were moved. There's no logical reason it has to be played from fall to spring, because most of the continent, most of the confederation plays a split, you know, two championships per year anyway. So I think it's kind of a no-brainer, and I think it would help MLS teams. I think Montreal is a, I don't know, it's kind of fluky. I mean, I don't think it's a sign much of anything.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I also think, too, you try talking to your common casual soccer fan or sports fan and explaining to them the CONCACAF Champions League, let alone the fact of all the craziness that we're talking about before, but just the scheduling of it and how it's a concurrent tournament with the season, but it actually spans two seasons in MLS and kind of two seasons in Mexico, but Mexico seasons are different than MLS. It's just for uniformity purpose and just for simplicity and honestly common sense, right? I mean, just put it like you're saying, Brian, you know, calendar year instead of spanning, you know, group stage in the summer and knockout stage in the winter and two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, teams that qualify, MLS teams that qualify for CCL don't start the tournament for like 8 to 10 months. They're not even the same team that qualified, you know? So, and in some cases, like for DC United and Montreal, that could be a good thing. But that hurts continuity. Also, Evan Bush is a hero, by the way. That guy, what didn't he have thrown at him the other day, right? I mean, he was hit on the head with a coin. He had guys gunning for his legs. I got to know him a little bit when I chatted with him when Montreal visited DC a few weeks ago. I never had spoken to him before, but really liked him and really liked the way he carried himself. And I thought he was, you know, CONCACAF tests your resolve and it forces you not to go insane in an insane environment. And I thought his demeanor and his composure really was sort of emblematic of the way Montreal's carried themselves. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Question for you, though. You use terms like no-brainer on and, you know, common sense on this stuff. Do you actually think CONCACAF will change the calendar for Champions League? I don't.
I have no idea. I don't know what the politics there are. But I feel like if I mean, clearly Liga MX and MLS are the elephants in the room, right? These are the two big time, you know, visible leagues in CONCACAF. And if they both want it changed, I don't see how it can't be changed. Whether MLS and Liga MX want it changed, I don't know. That would be a good couple phone calls for me to make. But, you know, I think it's in their best interest. I think both of them have an interest in having a change for the reasons I stated. And if they both want a change, why would CONCACAF say no?
Fair point. Fair point all around. It's one thing to point out about Montreal, no Justin Mapp, no Cameron Porter, star rookie who really rose to prominence during the CONCACAF Champions League knockout stage with that epic goal to keep Montreal alive. They're out injured for Club America, Ventura Alvarado, new U.S. national team dual citizen Mexican-American center back. He is suspended for the first leg of that final with yellow card accumulation. So something to keep in mind. And on the topic of Mexico and America, let's shift gears and talk about USA-Mexico coming up in San Antonio on April 15th, a sold-out Alamo Dome. Two domestic-based rosters, so we're not going to get a full potential Gold Cup final preview. But nevertheless, when USA and Mexico get together, it is always a special event. And Grant, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the national team kind of coming out of the last March friendlies and kind of what you expect to see against Mexico in San Antonio.
Well, I'm expecting a great event. You look at this game being sold out in San Antonio, and one result of guys like Michael Bradley and Clint Dempsey and Josie Altidore coming back to MLS is that when you have a game like this that is, you know, MLS-based players, Mexican-based players for the U.S., you're going to get something closer to the top USA national team. You're not going to have, you know, Alejandro Bedoya or Brad Guzan or Jeff Cameron, But at the same time, you're going to have a lot of the top U.S. players. And so I think that does give the U.S. an advantage. I do expect this crowd will be pretty pro-Mexico, taking place in San Antonio, which is fine. And really, this is the first of what could be three U.S.-Mexico games this year. When you look at the Gold Cup coming up this summer and the possibility of facing there, and also if the U.S. does not win the Gold Cup and Mexico does, and they would face each other in the Confederations Cup playoff after that. So I look forward any time to when the U.S. and Mexico play. And this game obviously is a friendly and pretty meaningless overall, but we've seen this game take place on this date the last couple of years. And anytime they meet each other, it's a lot of fun.
Brian, Mexico put out its roster already. The U.S. in typical fashion will probably wait until late on the weekend, or maybe even Monday if we're lucky enough. But Brian, when, you know, this Mexico team, you know, there's no Chicharito, there's no Dos Santos brothers. You know, the entire European contingent is gone. And like Grant was saying, you know, for the U.S., that's not really that big of a deal anymore. For Mexico, it kind of is a much bigger deal. But this is also a team preparing for a Copa America as well. So Mexico's got plenty on the line and a lot of young players trying to make a case. What do you think of this matchup generally, you know, kind of knowing and having an idea of who the U.S. will have on its roster?
One of the things I'm sort of looking at is whether there is it could just be circumstances. You know, the year after a World Cup can be a bit chaotic. And as Jurgen has said several times, it's a time to experiment and tinker and things of that nature. But there are some key MLS guys that were massive contributors toward the end of the last cycle who we haven't seen much of since the World Cup. I think about Graham Zusi, Omar Gonzalez, Matt Beisler, Kyle Beckerman, players like that who've been in camp. But maybe only one or two games. You know, we haven't sort of heard much about them as sort of, you know, are they still key cogs in this team? Or are we starting to see other MLS guys like Zardes and Breck Shea and Mix sort of become a newer generation of domestic-based players that Jurgen's going to start counting on? So I'm really curious now that sort of everyone's in season and, you know, people are healthy and he's really starting to look toward the Gold Cup, you know, who are going to be the guy? I mean, we know Bradley and Dempsey and Josie and Nick Raimondo. We know guys like that are solid. But yeah, I'm curious about sort of the next level down of MLS US talent and where Jurgen is thinking on that level. It's also been a while. I also feel maybe a bit of a sting was taken out of the U.S.-Mexico rivalry for a time. You know, Mexico really struggled at points in 2013. They needed, of course, Graham Zusi to even qualify for the World Cup. They were knocked out in the Gold Cup and were never able to play the U.S. You know, so it's been a while since the U.S., perhaps since 2013, you know, perhaps even the beginning, that 0-0 draw in Azteca, when the U.S. and Mexico played a really meaningful game. I think by the time they met in Columbus in the fall of 2013, Jurgen's team was pretty much clear through the World Cup. It was just a matter of time. And so, you know, it would be nice to see this rivalry sort of come back to the boil where it was. And as Grant said, if they wind up playing three times this year, that'll do it. So that's kind of another thing I'm excited about.
Well, if there's one person that can kind of interject some I don't know, bad blood maybe, or at least some fireworks, it's Clint Dempsey, right? And he's coming off a hamstring injury, playing in Texas against Mexico. You would think that he's going to be part of the team, you know, assuming that he's at full health, although LA does play Seattle, his Seattle does play LA anyway this weekend leading into the game. But Brian, just your take on Dempsey and his place in this rivalry and kind of his, I don't know, it's... He's almost a forgotten guy to me. You know, obviously he had that huge goal against Ghana in the World Cup. He is still the captain, but you know, he's not a guy who's consistently in the spotlight and isn't, you know, a USA Mexico game, no matter if it's a friendly or not, a chance to kind of interject himself back in there.
Yeah, it depends on the level he wants to be. You know, I mean, I don't know, you know, and this is pure speculation, but you know, where does he feel his national team career is right now? He's played in three World Cups. You know, he's in his early 30s, you know, whether or not he's going to be around long enough to go to Russia in 2018 is tough to say. I mean, I don't know. I think he's talked about wanting to play in the Copa America next year. Juergen's thinking might be that it's sort of time. We're near the tail end of the Dempsey era, and it might be time to sort of shift some of that responsibility and that leadership and that burden. That he's going to be the guy who scores the big goal. He's going to be the guy that creates the big chance. He's going to be the guy whose sort of attitude and persona inspire this team. Maybe that's starting to shift a little bit to other players. That's why I thought, Josie's return to form and at the same time his bit of a meltdown against Switzerland was a little disappointing, because I think some of that burden is going to shift to Josie, and it's going to be time for Josie to sort of stand up and be counted and be a leader on this team. But Dempsey is still, the most singularly dangerous player who wears a U.S. shirt. He's still capable of breaking a game open. I don't know if he's a 90-minute every game sort of threat anymore, but he still does things with the ball that no other U.S. player can do, and he'll be as effective and as impactful, I think, as he wants to be. And we'll find out over the next 6 to 8 months, what his feelings are about his national team career and where he sees it going.
A couple things I'd say really quickly about Dempsey are, here's the captain of the U.S. team, and based on what I understand, some of the fitness stuff that Klinsmann had with some of his players did include Dempsey in January. And so I'm curious to see what we can learn more about that relationship between Dempsey and Klinsmann right now. I think Brian's totally right. I don't know how long Dempsey will be with the national team. He's talked about playing through Copa America, not so much about playing through the next World Cup, which kind of makes sense given his age and is in the 30s. Michael Bradley was the captain in both games recently in Europe. Michael Bradley is the guy who a lot of people thought would become the captain and when Dempsey was chosen a couple of years ago. And so, I just want to see, one, who gets chosen to be captain here. I fully expect it will be Dempsey, but I'm not 100% on that. And I think also you look around, I think it was a good point Brian made earlier about Omar Gonzalez, Kyle Beckerman, guys like that, will they be called into this camp? Maybe not, I mean, you look at Ventura Alvarado, he played at center back for the U.S. in Europe and presumably will be called up for this game. And will he potentially get the nod ahead of a guy like Omar Gonzalez? Kyle Beckerman, a guy who was not involved in the January camp, is he done with the national team? I thought he was extremely important for the U.S. during the World Cup, should have started against Belgium, and yet maybe his time is up with the U.S. national team. So Graham Zusi been hurt with a hamstring, so I don't expect he'll be coming in for this. But just the roster itself, I think there would be some interesting choices.
Okay, shifting from Dempsey to one guy who's making headlines overseas back here, Chicharito reports that Orlando City is interested in potentially signing him. Report in the Telegraph and in the UK now saying that he wants to stay overseas. Doesn't look like he has much of a future with Manchester United anymore. But should Chicharito come to MLS? Is that the biggest potential signing for the league right now, given the Mexican market, the big Latin American market, the strides MLS is taking to kind of expand its, you see the signings of Kubo Torres, for instance, and the amount of money that they're putting in CONCACAF's best players. Is he kind of the guy that would kind of make the league go next level?
I think he'd be an obvious great fit for MLS. He'd draw a ton of fans to MLS games. He's a guy who fits this pattern of Dempsey and Bradley and Altidor coming back to the league in their primes. Chicharito's in his prime. Now, maybe he hasn't played a ton over the last couple of years at club level, but clearly a guy who could bring a lot of talent and a ton of star power to a league that seems to be moving in those directions, and a league that is willing to pay far above market value to bring these guys into the league. So Chicharito would be great. That's kind of a no-brainer. I get it, but I also think his incentives and motivations are different from the top U.S. players like Bradley and Altidore who have come back to the league, and it may not be enough to just pay crazy sums of money above market value because he doesn't have a lot of incentive to want to build MLS and build soccer in America.
Brian, what do you think about a potential Chicharito in MLS or whether it's even in his interest to come to the league at this point?
Well, I'm on the hook because in our roundtable preview, I said that he would be the next big name to come to MLS. And I think I also said that Orlando would struggle because they didn't have a finisher. So I also got plenty wrong too, but we won't talk about that. But I love the fact that Flavio Da Silva just doesn't care and will just, like, you know, throw money around and try to get these guys to show up. I think it's fantastic. I think Flavio in Orlando, I mean, Grant was down there and wrote a really nice story about sort of what they're building there. You know, they're great for the league, and they're going to, you know, like some of these other teams are doing, they're going to raise the bar and force clubs to be a bit more ambitious if they want to compete. So I don't know Chicharito. I don't know what he wants out of his life or his career. I mean, some guys want to come to MLS because they want to live in the U.S. or Canada. Some guys want to come because they want to build the league. Some guys want to come because they want to be the centerpiece of a team and have that. I mean, that was a lot of what Michael Bradley's decision was about, is he didn't want to be a role player anymore. He wanted to be the anchor of a team and be the leader of a team. And, you know, and some guys want to come and make a lot of money. And I don't know what Chicharito's motivations are, but if he enjoys living in Europe and playing in Europe and wants to prove himself there, he should do that. But I like the fact that players like that are being linked to MLS, not 38, 39-year-old, you know, guys with gray hair who are going to finish up here, but guys in their prime, like Grant said. And for everyone, you know, for every 10 that are linked, maybe one will actually sign. And for everyone that does, it'll make the league better. And you know, it's not a bad thing for these rumors to be bouncing around. And you know, maybe Chicharito won't play, but the next one will.
Maybe we'll see. I don't know that, you know, now is necessarily the time for him, but I think if he ever did come to MLS, the draw would just be huge. And not just him, a guy like Giovanni Dos Santos as well. And you know, maybe it's a little bit of a pipe dream right now. I mean, those guys, like you said, their motivations are a little bit different than some of the American players who have come back to the league. But, you know, I think if you start bringing in the best Mexican players to pair with the best American players, and then you know, I think you're building something pretty good. You know, talk about the team that Chicharito is being linked to, Orlando City, as we kind of wrap up with a look ahead to the MLS weekend. Three games really stick out to me on this week's schedule. LA Seattle, just because that, you know, two class teams in the league right now if you're looking at top to bottom quality and success. Orlando and Portland, where I'm wondering if Caleb Porter is going to ask Adrian Heath if he has yet to see the scoreboard when that game ends. And then, of course, DC, New York, you know, the historic rivalry between the two sides. And you know, to me at least, surprising that both are on top of the MLS Eastern Conference at this point. Brian, let's start with you. You know, looking at those three games, I guess what stands out to you? What are you looking forward to see from this weekend in MLS?
Well, I'll be at RFK, I hope, I assume, for DC, New York. And you know, that's a real rivalry, and it's a rivalry that goes back two decades, and it's a rivalry with history and context and continuity. It's always fun. And so I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, DC has, you know, survived. I mean, they're defending really well. The effort's been outstanding, and they've snuck a few wins with late goals. But you've got to remember that, you know, Fabian Espindola is still serving a 6-game suspension. I mean, he was stupid. He shoved a ref, but, you know, he deserves it. But, you know, he's still an extremely talented and influential player that hasn't yet played for DC. And of course, Eddie Johnson out with a heart condition. He may never play again. You know, while we hope the best for him, you know, DC also has to figure out when it's going to get access to a DP salary cap charge. That's sort of going unused right now. So, you know, DC will be a better attacking team as the year goes on. And obviously New York, remade under Jesse Marsh, younger, more cohesive, more energetic, you know, a lot more of a team concept and the dynamic in that locker room this year. And I think both teams have reason to be optimistic, and I'm excited to be there on Saturday.
For me, just to see DC get off to the start that they have, was it three wins, one loss? You know, it hasn't been the prettiest soccer, but you know, the last time they had such a resurgent season, they followed it up with a 3-win season, period. And now, you know, here they are after another resurgent season, and they've, you know, it looks like they're picking up where they left off as opposed to the last time. So that's encouraging for them. For New York, I mean, who would have thought that New York would be one of the last two unbeaten teams in the league right now? It's just them and Salt Lake, given the offseason turmoil, the replacement of Mike Pecky for Jesse Marsh, but that, you know, they've bought in. The guys are playing considerably well. I think it's a really interesting early season matchup. You know, we all know how much significance in the standings these early season matchups really carry, which is, you know, let's be honest, very little. But that said, it's a good time for these two teams to be going head to head. Grant, you were just down in Orlando and around that team and talking to Phil Rollins. Now they go into Portland. They've given up a couple of late goals. This is kind of an important game for them.
Orlando, very much an expansion team right now, and they've been capable of some very good moments of soccer without necessarily finishing a lot. That was something we saw against DC United last week, where Orlando created all these chances, couldn't finish, and then Luis Silva just hits a great free kick on one of DC's few chances in injury time to get the win down Orlando. But in the big picture, Orlando and what's happening there with their soccer culture that they're developing is, in my opinion, the story of the season so far in MLS. And just being down there and talking to Phil Rollins, one of the owners of the team, the guy who founded the team originally in Austin, Texas, moved it to Orlando. And what was interesting to me was that he had no connection to Orlando before they moved there. He just wanted to have a team get into MLS and told me that they did a lot of market research, a lot of due diligence, and ended up deciding on Orlando, which happens to be in Florida, which is a graveyard for MLS teams over the years, obviously, with Tampa Bay and Miami folding more than a decade ago. So he's already showing, the team is showing, that soccer MLS can succeed in the state of Florida. And obviously, it's still fairly early, but we're starting to see the kind of crowds that Orlando is drawing on a regular basis. And it's not 62,000 like they got for their opener, which is always going to be a one-off, but it is 31,000, 32,000 in the Citrus Bowl, which is fantastic, and which is actually causing them to consider that maybe the soccer stadium they're building right now in downtown Orlando is too small at 20,000. But he told me it is expandable pretty easily to 26,000, 27,000. I'm curious to see how soon they might pull that trigger. Now, this week, you see Orlando going into Portland for one of the national games on Sunday. And, I mean, it should be an entertaining game, I would think. Both these teams like to attack. In Portland, always seems to bring some sort of drama, whether it's on the field or off the field. And I've been impressed by how they performed without two MLS All-Stars, Diego Valeri and Will Johnson, and maybe Caleb Porter modifying the way he wants his team to play to be a little bit more pragmatic this year, but still, in my opinion, fun to watch. So I think that should be a good matchup. Whenever you have a player like Kaká on the field, he's clearly bringing his A game to this league. I think even in a tough away environment, he's capable of doing something that could give Orlando a result there.
I'll just say this one thing about Portland anyway. Their games are kind of becoming must watch now, right? You want to see what Caleb Porter does. He's not afraid to take on anybody. He'll take on Bruce Arena, Pep Guardiola, Oscar Pereja. Let's just make this a thing. I think if he just kind of embraces that, which it looks like he is, I mean, he doesn't care, right?
I love it. I think it's fun for the league. It's amusing to watch. And I don't think Caleb Porter's necessarily at fault in all of these things. I think Oscar Pereja was the guy who was waving the tissue at him. And, you know, Caleb Porter's not going to back down from anybody either. So I think we need more entertainment, necessarily more villains sometimes in MLS. And anytime you have some of that stuff happening, it's fun to talk about.
I just want him to say, like, at his next press conference, "I'm the special one," and then we are set.
Yes. If there is a special mind in MLS, if you will, if there's two of them, it's Siggy Schmidt and Bruce Arena, and they go head to head again. LA Seattle, the marquee matchup of the weekend, the first of their matchups this season.
Hall of Famer Siggy Schmidt.
That is right. Congratulations are in order for him, Casey Keller as well. And now you look at LA Seattle, Clint Dempsey, we would assume would return if we're going with the timeline that U.S. Soccer was giving us with his hamstring injury. Going against an LA team, you know, defending champions, but they're struggling a little bit. The last couple of games haven't been that great. Obviously, you know, we know how much stock Bruce Arena puts into these early season games, which again is very little. But does this matter, Brian, for LA? Do they need a result?
No, they don't. They don't need one. They're so confident in the way they do things. They've established so clearly over the past 5 or 6 years sort of how they build over the course of a season to make sure they're playing their best soccer in September, October, and November. That I would guess. I mean, would they rather win? Sure, but is there sort of any concern below the surface? But, you know, obviously, if there are mistakes made, if there are tactical things to address, if there are injuries, of course, they're going to work on those things. But, you know, no one at StubHub Center is questioning the way they do things. And obviously, that team's going to change fundamentally over the summer when Steven Gerrard arrives. So their job until that happens is to just sort of, you know, stay in it, you know, win enough games to sort of be in the hunt and then hit the gas like they always do in the fall. And, you know, I don't think they're losing any sleep at all over the fact that the last couple games haven't gone well.
I would say this, that in the big picture, Brian's totally right. But I am slightly surprised by the way LA has played so far, especially the last few games, and how much they do miss Landon Donovan. And Gerrard is going to be coming into a situation where he's going to be needed to perform. And we have this history over the years of big-name stars like Beckham and Henry who come into the league in mid-season, and it's actually taken them a while to adjust. And, you know, all of the travel and the heat and all the things that MLS throws at you that you don't experience in Europe. And I don't know if Steven Gerrard is fully aware yet that there's a good chance when he comes and joins this team that they're really going to be looking to him to provide something that they don't have right now. You see how frustrated Robbie Keane is with his teammates. I don't think there's a lot at stake right now for LA, but I do think these guys are frustrated. When you look at Omar Gonzalez's Twitter and talking about we need to win, I think he's accurate in that sense. And so then the question becomes this LA-Seattle early season matchup. These are the two best teams from last year. I hope we get the kind of game that we saw more in the regular at the end of the regular season last year when these two teams played, as opposed to their playoff games, which were cagier and for me not as good. But you know, these are marquee teams in the league, and so I love, by the way, these Sunday doubleheaders that are the national games on Fox and ESPN, because they really have provided destination viewing every week now. You put that with a Univision game on Friday night, I really think that was a good call. And I think that's going to maybe hopefully answer some of MLS's TV problems. Not only do we have these destination viewing situations, but you've got good games, good teams in good atmospheres. And so I'm really looking forward to a couple more games this Sunday.
You talk about destination viewing. We hope that we can make this destination listening for you guys. That's going to do it for us with this Planet Football podcast relaunch. But thank you for listening. It's so good to be back. For Grant Wall, Brian Strauss, I am Avi Creditor. We'll see you next week.
About the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.